This is KAZU-FM, Pacific Grove, California, and this is Mae Brussels speaking. This is World Watchers program, now beginning. It's broadcast number 653, June the 11th, 1984. Last year, I began a three-part or four-part series on the relationship of the organization known as Western Goals to the Washington powers that be for the former Chief of Staff, Admiral Moore, on the board of Western Goals, and the links of that organization and the people on Western Goals, the head of it, Larry McDonald, to the violence at Munich, the Olympic Game massacre. On one program, I said the 1976 Olympics, but I usually mean, and it is the 1972 Olympics, so we'll correct it right there. They took place in 1972. Just at the end of May last year was the expose of the Los Angeles Times linking the Los Angeles Police Department to the computer in Long Beach belonging to Jay Paul, $100,000 computer, paid by Larry McDonald. And that opened up a whole can of worms of the police department in Los Angeles to the head of the John Birch Society, to the wife of John Reese, Louise Reese, who worked with Senator Joe McCarthy with the House on American Activities. And I was talking about the Los Angeles Police Department a year ago, and tonight I'm going back to it, a full cycle of the link of the police to what is happening now, the Ronald Reagan, Edwin Meese administration in California, the information that was in those computers. That case was hushed up, and the police department settled almost $2 million settlement, not to go to trial on this particular case. They were ready to pay the money rather than go to trial. Incidentally, a Mr. Cleghorn from the police intelligence that worked with Jay Paul and had things to do with the Larry McDonald Western Goals file is now running for the assembly up in California, from the police intelligence to the security for the Olympics, the Los Angeles security team, and now he's running for the assembly. As long as they settled out of court and paid a fee, which is an admission of guilt, I don't know why this man should be able to go up to the California Assembly and be with Ed Davis, the former chief of police of Los Angeles Police Department that set the network of a Gestapo before Mr. Daryl Gates took over. Cleghorn, who worked with Jay Paul, is now running in the Assembly. Well, just this week, an interesting lawsuit was filed apropos of the Larry McDonald story. Remember, his name was linked in the end of May of 1983, and August the 18th, his name was on the front page of the Washington Post with his relationship to the Los Angeles Police Department and the suit that was going on there. And within several weeks, on September the 1st, Larry McDonald was killed in that airplane, the Korean Airline. Now, Catherine McDonald, the widow, has filed a $105 million lawsuit for her husband's death. And this one case was thrown out in New York, and they refer to that case because I was shocked at the judge's decision. But I want to read you from the Houston Post. The widow of Larry McDonald wants $105 million because of the death of her husband. She's not suing the Korean airline or the Korean government. She's asking $17 million from the Korean airline. I'm sorry, that much from the airline. $7 million from the United States government. $27 million from Boeing company that built the plane. $27 million from Litton Industry that manufactured the navigation equipment. $27 million from Jepson Sanderson, designer of navigation charts that the plane used. The plane flew off course for several hours and strayed into Soviet aerospace. The United States officials have been accused of negligence and have been named in nearly 90 lawsuits that have been filed by families of 240 passengers. Attorneys for McDonald said the airline, number one, failed to exercise the required degree of care in transporting the decedent willfully and wantonly, and they performed hazardous operational acts with the knowledge that said acts were likely to result in injury to the passengers. They willfully performed hazardous operation acts with recklessness and disregard of the consequences that injury would happen, and they intentionally violated known requirements and standards of care with the knowledge that those violations would cause injury to the passengers. Now, I'm going to update the Korean Airlines story in a few weeks, but one article from the London Times describes the head pilot, the pilot for the president of South Korea, sitting with Larry McDonald in this plane in the back seats just prior before it went down. The suit said the federal government was negligent. It permitted the deployment of military planes, those are the C-135s, in the vicinity of the flight path of the Korean airline, the commercial plane. The complaint said the government should have known that when the radar returned from its military aircraft and Flight 007 would be similarly received on the USSR radar, and Flight 007 could not be mistaken by the Russians as a military aircraft and subjective to fatal defensive measures. What she's saying is they flew this spy plane alongside the other plane, really saying the Russians had no way. She's not blaming the Russians at all. This was a violently anti-Russian family, anti-Soviet, anti-communist. She's saying, what could they do? If you sent a military plane alongside my husband's plane simultaneously, the Russians can't distinguish between the military and the commercial, and you are negligent. Now, this is what I had part of this on the air a few weeks ago, April 19th. Chief U.S. District Judge Aubrey Robinson, who's handling the consolidated cases of the other people filing suit, said the courts, remember this quotation, have no authority to act on political questions and decisions made by the U.S. Armed Forces. Remember how shocked I was by this. He said the court may not appraise the necessity or desirability of conducting the reconnaissance activities alleged by the plaintiff. Such appraisal would involve the court in foreign policy determination calling for non-judicial discretion, so that the conduct of sending spy planes alongside his plane is the decision of the military, and the court cannot have precedent over the United States military, which means that any commercial plane you're on, or any activity or spying they're doing, or if the equipment isn't working because they want you shot down. Now, what they did with Larry McDonald was he became a hero, like John Birch, who was killed by the Red Chinese, the first American killed when the Red Chinese were in power. He was president of the Birch Society. He was caught with the Los Angeles police suit with his files in the Los Angeles Police Department. And as soon as he becomes public and gets attention, he can be shot down, made a martyr for the Birch Society, made a martyr for the far right wing that keeps referring to the terrible Russians, and get rid of them at the same time. That's what I was writing about last October, and that's what is in the news today. And I'm going to run down a few articles, not point by point in each of them, but some main points of news this week that I would prefer not talking about, but eventually, and sometimes we have to go into it. I like to do details of particular people like Robert Keith Gray or Edwin Meese or the biotech, but every once in a while you have to have an overview of history of what is happening and how it's happening at the present time. And I never saw one week where so many articles in this past week and a half put together, in essence, everything I've been trying to explain for 13 years on the radio. The way the articles ran is loud and clear. The first is a two-part story in the Washington Post, May 27th and May 28th, written by Rick Atkinson for the Washington Post. Thinking the unthinkable, the obscure office drafts the plans for World War III. The office is called the Defense Nuclear Agency, DNA, not the experimentation with genes, but DNA. It is an office in Washington, D.C. that straps Reese's monkeys into aircraft similar to the B-52, sends them off, gives them radiation, tests them, their vigor, and so forth. They experiment behind huge doors in the Pentagon. The nuclear explosion, the rays, they give 10 million volts of gamma rays to simulate the radiation from a nuclear explosion. They have rooms called the Aurora. the casino, the blackjack, the Python, and more than 500 times a year. That's about one or two times a day sometimes. Without fuss or fanfare, they go into a concrete bunker down the road where they simulate war in a vault, 50-ton door, and the walls are as thick as a man's shoulders or broad, they describe. I mean, they are like, what, 4 feet or something thick. 50-ton doors where they lay out radiation, planning the next nuclear war. Now, they claim in 1963, the United States and the Soviet Union agreed on no atmospheric testing. So they go into this large underground with new weapons, the MX, the Trident, and they prepare to see what radiation blasts will be. The electronic circuits are all working, and they are using the most highly active weapons to test and preparing for World War III. The amount of radiation is horrendous. The statistics are overwhelming. But this was a two-part story, two full pages plus, in the Washington Post on the preparation of the burns, the type of reaction of World War III. Now, Jack Anderson today has an article, Preparing for the Big One. The secret Pentagon papers are getting ready for the power keg in the Middle East. Just the Armageddon is what they're waiting for, and it has to do with the shifting of power from the Muslims and from the Khomeini, who can move to Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and maybe take the handful of Saudi cousins that run the whole country. The power of the Muslim group that got control of its own energy and its own vitality, and the game we've played, arming Iraq against Iran, and the confusion. And I haven't even detailed that for you in those conflicts, which I should. But Anderson has a story, Preparing for the Big One, and the Washington Post has these two large stories, putting the weapons through their tests and preparing for World War III. Now, the preparation of war is going to come in some very subtle way. It will be blamed on terrorism, just like Archduke Franz Joseph was shot and the World War I began, or Adolf Hitler put Germans into Polish uniforms and said the Germans were attacked at the Polish border. The excuses for war, the Reichstag, the bombing of the building, the chancellery in Germany, the government buildings, was excuse to round up and begin the concentration camps and take control of the government because of the communist terrorists. Ronald Reagan went to England with the idea of getting all the allies to act against terrorism. Now, the big story out of England is terrorism. There's every bit of evidence that that Libyan embassy did not shoot the gun. The gun was never found. There was no person named who shot that woman, the British policeman on the street. And Gaddafi has said that it was a provocateur situation. It was perfect prior to the summit conference to have that scene that went on, that siege, outside of the Libyan embassy. Now, the countries are bankrupt. The cash is out of this country and other countries. We cannot maintain this war economy of building ships and weapons. The paper behind the meetings in London is filled with the bankruptcy of all the Western countries and their terrible problems of holding on to what they haven't got, which they already loaned out. And the scare of people that Ronald Reagan truly will get them into war. They read the Washington Post, too, and the London Times and other stories. So they divert it, like Adolf Hitler did, to the word is terrorism. And Reagan wants his allies not to talk about the economy, but to talk about terrorism. That is the catchword. That's why my article, The SLA is a CIA, was so important in 1974, 10 years ago. And one evening, I'll just spend 1 hour reading sections of that if you don't have a copy, or reminding of you what's in it if you do. Now, in Congress, Reagan is asking for laws of housing people that he decides are terrorists. They're called self-styled civil libertarians, that Edwin Meese and Orrin Hatch and Strom Thurmond and Mr. Jeremiah Denton will decide upon. And Congress is saying the anti-terrorism plan is like Joseph McCarthy's tactics. The Washington Post and New York Times and L.A. Times have stories. Senators assailed the new bill on terrorism. Well, Western goals has a big influence in Washington, D.C. and into the Pentagon. And the whole point about terrorism is that the people on Western Goals were directly involved with terrorism with George Habash in Lebanon, Fayyad Habash in Chile, and with the PLO, and they're going to use terrorism as the means to take away our rights, create the provocateurs, and John Reese's wife, Reese is the head of Western Goals and running their publications. She worked for Senator Joe McCarthy. Robert Morris, very active, worked with the McCarthy era, those people in the House committee and the terrorizing of various people and their blacklisting of their jobs. And Young America for Freedom was to come in and bring a group from Munich, Germany, United States to form to counteract the libs in America and take over the student activity around the campuses. So Reagan's in London talking about terrorism. Congress is saying you can't do it. And Washington Post, the New York Times, rather, has a big article by Leslie Gelb. The administration debates anti-terrorist measures. Now, William Casey, the director of the CIA, wants to have a new, he's going to name a new czar. It'll be the head of the terrorism, the director of the Office for Combating Terrorism. And he will go into blacklisting people, naming people who are potential threats, and they're doing biological studies of left-handed, right-handed, right eye, left eye, potential terrorists, loners, broken families, you name it, rounding suspects up on biological statistics, which is what Hitler wanted also. So the New York Times has a story 3.5 years ago when Ronald Reagan was president. He announced that the most important thing in this country, the first national problem, is terrorism, not the mafia, not the heroin, not the cocaine, drugging America, not exporting our factories overseas, not closing up 100,000 farms this year and the farmers foreclosing, not the statistics of unemployment and the hardships that are not really put into the computers until after the elections. Then you'll see the story. He has had in his mind, this is a thing that he's been determined to do since he was governor of California. The day he became governor, he wanted to have that mind control center. His second term, he started UCLA, electrodes, implants into prisoners, checking children of Indians and blacks and minorities to see why they would rise up if they were out of food and hungry, I suppose, checking the terrorism of the minorities and not the white collar crimes at all. Robert McFarlane, the National Security Advisor, has worked with Ronald Reagan on this terrorist outfit plan and with the CIA, and they discuss global issues. So that right now, Congress is discussing terrorism. Now, also in the New York Times, I don't know how many of you saw it, Jeff Gerth's article, full-page article, United States military creates secret units in sensitive tasks abroad. I don't know why Gerth, who I always praise for his journalism, says they're secret units. They have showed their faces everywhere. These are the Rangers. These are the Special Forces. These are the Green Berets. These were the men formed by Mr. Siegs and Adolf Hitler's commando troops. They came out of Nazi Germany and came to the United States. The Defense Department is arguing about how much power the secret groups could have, but the importance of the Grenada invasion was that they tested the Rangers and the Berets and gave them the accolades that you are now American heroes. They want these people to operate under the Joint Special Operations Command Center at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. And they have other offices. This is the Green Berets. These are your special forces. And they referred to them in this one article about their work down in Grenada. This is where they became prominent, where you took the fabric off the statue, and they really got to work and overthrew and took a whole country. Now, one unit is described as the Navy SEAL, Team 6, SIX, based in Little Creek Naval Amphibious Base in Norfolk, Virginia. There's another group in Tucson, Arizona, which was a CIA base. What you have here is a group of people that were formed after World War II that are the essence of the Special Forces, the Gestapo, the SS, honed and trained by Otto Skorzeny and Adolf Hitler's teams, and to take countries. And these are the loyal people that, similar to Hitler's special forces and teams, as I say, that swore to the Thousand Year Reich, the Waffen SS. When Grenada invasion took place, and Maurice Bishop was murdered. The first person at Maurice Bishop's desk was this Mr. Brown, who runs the Soldier of Fortune magazine, who sets up the mercenaries all over the world that work with the CIA, the death squads, the assassination teams. Brown was taking papers out with Michael Ledeen from Disinformation and Counterintelligence with his links to Georgetown. These are the private armies that will kill you. They have, they will kill in the United States, and I believe they're behind the death squads of many people in the United States that we have not admitted exist. They are private mercenaries who can bomb places, kill, have car accidents, silencers. They go all over the world. They're for hire, but they are part of the Central Intelligence Agency, and the U.S. military is creating more of their units working with the Pentagon and the CIA, and they are getting the power away from the standard army. You see, the enlisted army, or the army that you have to draft, includes Chicanos and blacks and a cross-section of America. And what they want is an elite guard who does the work, who goes in, who kills the heads of states, who kills particular people that are opposing selected government officials that we want. These are the commandos. That the taking of Grenada was exactly like Adolf Hitler's Blitzkrieg, the Anschluss. They went in swiftly, took the place, used the elite guard, gave them all medals, and now there's a large story in the New York Times, a controversy on how much power they should have and working in the Pentagon. The New York Times, again, Leslie Gelb has a story June 1st. The CIA said to assemble the mines in Nicaragua with Navy help. That is John Layman, a staunch supporter of anti-Soviet activity that includes everything you want to do. He sent in ships. You see, we're not at war anymore. The United States was at war against Cambodia. But our Navy is helping the CIA carry their private wars. And this is a story about the U.S. Navy and the CIA weapons group that made the mine casings from sewer pipes, stuffed them with explosives. The United States Surface Weapons, the Mines Division of the Naval Surface Weapons Center in White Oaks in Silver Spring, Maryland, provided everything they did. Now, that is Henry Kissinger, like he did in Southeast Asia and Vietnam and so forth, carrying on in Cambodia those wars. These are not secret wars. We are at war, and the Navy and the Army work with these little teams, but we're saying the little teams are doing it, that they are section, they are part of the large Pentagon, and they're part and parcel of the whole problem. The Joint Chief of Staff, as I say, are trying to resist this. A senior Defense Department official doesn't like it. They say that we can carry the weapons problems, the wars, and there's a conflict between the branches of the Army. The Air Force recognizes, according to the New York Times story of May 27th, the importance of special operation forces, and the Air Force will have a long-term plan to carry out the Defense Department policy. This is all irregardless of what Congress votes or Congress says. The Air Force spokesman pointed to the 23rd Air Force formed last year to integrate special operations with and to recovery forces, and they absorbed the existing unit that was trained in the United States to increase United States combat capability. They use the Army Special Forces, the Green Berets, the Rangers, the Navy SEALs. The Air Force uses Special Operations Wing so that all of them are combining together. Now, former Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Thayer reinforced this policy last October. Since October, he's kicked out of government, out of the Defense Department as a crook with foreknowledge of purchases and personal gains. He's one of the men that was behind these special forces. These are the most dangerous thing that ever happened to the United States military. Now, one of the men that's pushing these special forces, and they told Congress, you can't turn it down. The president wants it. There is an article to the United States Army, the heads of the chief of staff, you can't turn it down because this is what Reagan wants. The official Noel Cook, Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Security, said that Ronald Reagan, his National Security Advisor Robert C. McFarlane, and Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger says this simply has to be done. We need these special forces. Well, McFarlane set up another provocateur situation, which I said got us into this mess. There were a whole series of them. Remember the Korean airline, the bombing in Burma of the South Koreans, the killing of Americans in Lebanon. These were provocateur situations, the creation of the medical school that said you have to come in and save us in Grenada. We've had a lot of actions that become the justification for further military repression and more elite guards. Now, Mr. McFarlane, who's the National Security Advisor, was the head of the Middle East in Lebanon. And 2 days, just about 2 days before the embassy was bombed and the kamikaze car went in, for which there's been no trace, no prosecution, no evidence who did it. A lot of evidence that they had foreknowledge, that they didn't make the place secure. A lot of reason to believe it was like the Reichstag. McFarlane runs home from Lebanon because he gets out of the scene just a day before that happens. And he gets appointed as National Security Advisor just at the time of the Grenada invasion to take care of that, which tested the special forces that he and Reagan and Weinberger said we had to have. Now, McFarlane was a military assistant to Henry Kissinger from 1973 to 75, just to tell you where he comes from. He was Kissinger's national security. When Kissinger was national security advisor, he was assistant. Then he worked for Mr. Scowcroft from 1976 to the end of the Ford administration. And Mr. Scowcroft is now part of Kissinger Associates, a private group that can make decisions and overthrow countries under the guise of clients of countries. That's the Kissinger Associates. Now, after he was in the Marine Corps, which is the special forces, a part of the special forces of the Marine, he also was made a special counselor to Alexander Haig, McFarlane. You see, the New York Times has a story that we have to have Reagan orders that McFarlane, Weinberger, and Reagan say we have to have this. Haig made McFarlane his counselor when he was Secretary of State, and he was used on all kinds of jobs as the troubleshooter. So he orders the Pentagon to do this. He's from the Marines, and this is very important because it will create the possibility for Gestapo in the United States. Don't think that the Berets, Green Berets and the Rangers, the Soldiers of Fortune, the mercenary, are going to leave you alone in this country if you speak up against things that are happening. As I've said before, this country is going to become like Chile and Argentina. In fact, there's an article by Henry Kissinger about him in the paper last week saying that if you don't shape up and get more strict and rigid, you're going to look like Argentina. Well, he was close to those people while 40 to 50,000 people disappeared, and he's making a threat that our future will be like Argentina. And we'll do more about Henry Kissinger in a while. Now, along with those lines of my depression or my really sadness of thinking how far these special forces have gone, formed by the Nazis, the plans for World War III, there was and the use of McFarlane pushing this through, and the new terrorism laws that they want to put into effect and the excuse for terrorism in London. To top that off, there was a story, a full three quarters of a page out of the Houston Post. If you don't know this name, you better learn it. And if you're from California, you know it. It says the new Texas Department of Correction chief is a real plo. He's no diplomat. He says prisons are for punishment, not rehabilitation. And his name is Raymond Pecunier, the former head of prisons in California under Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan. The years that I was helping prisoners here, he was having killings in the yard out at Soledad. He was behind the San Quentin Six, the shooting of the judge at Marin County, pitting the black guerrillas against the Nazi, the white Aryan Brotherhood, putting innocent people in jail, framing people, working with Evel Younger, the attorney general. Pecunier left California. He worked, was taken from the prison work by Jerry Brown, but given another position with the old people in the old people's homes. You know how great that was. Then he was meddling around in New Mexico when those prisoners had their eyes gouged out with screwdrivers when there was that prison riot. And they went to the files, the top dog Gestapo prisoners, the meanest, went to the files and took out the names of informers and cut them open. And we had a massacre in New Mexico that has yet to be investigated or anybody to expose it. Pecunier was the one who resisted change. He said, shake down certain kinds of bars there and put up glass. And it was the glass they broke. This cast of characters of Meese and Pecunier goes back a long time and Ronald Reagan. Now, He's become the head of the state of Texas prison system. Think of that. Remember in 1974, maybe you don't, I said that those huge airports would be used for taking people out of the country, and mentioned this many times. Procuniae is a evil man who, if he were exposed, like we did after the war with Himmler or Goering or Mengele's or Goebbels, why do we have to wait till so many people die and pin a few names when it happened in this country, in the state of California? And now he's moved to Texas. And there are other large articles. Wait, we'll take a one-minute break now. It's on the half hour. We'll stop with Procuniae for 1 minute, and I'll take a half hour, one-minute break, because we split at that time. And I'll do more on Procuniae. I do want to identify the station. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.